Today on The Grave Talks, The Hauntings of the Ohio State Reformatory, a conversation with Greg Faketic. The Ohio State Reformatory is a historic prison located in Mansfield, Ohio. It was built between 1886 and 1910 and remained in operation until 1990. This facility has been seen in a number of films, TV shows, and music videos. It was made most famous by the film The Shawshank Redemption when it was used for most scenes of the movie. And it is also known as one of the most haunted prisons in America. I'm Carol Hughes in for Tony Bruschi, and today on this episode of The Grave Talks, our conversation with Greg Faketic, lead paranormal investigator at the Ohio State Reformatory. Greg, I have to start this by saying, just looking at photos of the building, this is a building that looks incredibly haunted.
It sure does. That's exactly how I felt the first time I saw the building. It was like, oh my, am I going to be spending the night in there? It was kind of intimidating at the time.
And it's huge, too. This is, I don't know what the square footage of, but it is a massive building.
Yeah, it's about 250,000 square feet.
Ooh. What do you know about the history of the building? I know that they started building it in 1886, and it took 24 years for them to complete the building.
Right. It did open in 1896. The administration portion, which is that huge castle-looking structure in front of the building, and the west cell block, those actually opened up in 1896 when it opened its doors to its first 150 prisoners. And they were immediately put to work on the prison sewer system, and they built a 25-foot stone wall surrounding the complex. And then the east cell block started working on the east cell block, and that's the one that was completed in 1910.
And originally, from what I was reading, they had intended this facility for first-time offenders, and I'm reading what I read here, to be humanely rehabilitated, and the architecture was supposed to encourage inmates back to a rebirth of their spiritual lives, away from their sinful lifestyle and toward repentance, which sounds really simple. But when they get there, they put them to work building this massive building.
Correct.
So I guess that could be a rebirth of their spiritual lives in some way, really hard work.
Well, also, too, when it was originally built and opened, it was an intermediate prison for young first-time nonviolent offenders. And it was like the halfway prison between like the boys' school and then the Ohio Penitentiary. And the inmates had to do three things. They had to go to school, they had to go to church, and they had to learn a trade. That way, when they were released, they had those skills. And at the time, they used to only spend about 8 hours a night in their cells, you know, give or take. It worked a lot of the time. There wasn't a lot of return offenders. So it did work for a while. And, you know, putting them to work, building things, that was giving them a trade.
And it, you know, now you think about it, some people are locked in a cell for 23 hours a day. You know, there's no rehabilitation there at all.
And that's what happened to the Ohio State Reformatory. You know, throughout the years, I mean, it was great when it started, but then, you know, times change, people change, things change. And eventually it slowly did turn into a maximum security prison.
Now, it was in operation up until 1990?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And it turned into, you know, late 60s, early 70s is when it was a long maximum security prison. And like you said, I mean, they used to spend, you know, 23 hours a day in their cells. Because they had rights. You couldn't force them to go to church. You couldn't force them to learn a trade. And you couldn't force them to go to school. So they used to spend all that time in those cells. And those cells were not very big, especially in the east cell block. They're only 8 feet deep by 5.5 feet wide. And two inmates to a cell and sometimes three. Very inhumane.
I did read that the inmates sued the state of Ohio for inhumane treatment, the prisoners yes. in this facility, and they won.
Yes, and they won their lawsuit, and the state built them, other prisons, and the last inmates left December 31st, 1990.
Now, after the inmates left, it did sit empty for several years. And then I read that some locals bought the building from the state for $1?
Correct.
That's interesting to me. So obviously, the intention was to restore it and maybe use it as a museum, or was their intention? Did they have other intentions when they first bought it?
No, I think that their intentions were always to save the building. I mean, it was a very important place, you know, to the history of Mansfield. And I think they had this vision of turning it into a museum. And that's what they did. I think they purchased it in 1995, around that time. And since then, it's just grown and grown. And other movies have been filmed there, TV shows, music videos. And it is one of the top tourist destinations in the state of Ohio.
Architecturally, it is a beautiful, beautiful building. But I mean, it is intimidating. To me, it looks really haunted. But it is beautiful architecturally, so it's wonderful that they saved the building.
Right. And it's funny, too, because inmates used to call it Dracula's Castle.
I could see that. Now, your job there is lead paranormal investigator?
Correct.
Let's talk about the hauntings, because with a history like that building has, are there well-known spirits in the building? Share some of your experiences.
We do believe that there are some spirits in there that were real people that worked there or, died there. And throughout the whole building, I mean, it's almost every part of the building can be active. Obviously, just like any location, there's locations that are way more active than other locations. One of the spirits that we believe may be there is one of the former superintendents. His name was Art Gladke. He was superintendent from 1935 until 1959. He suffered a fatal heart attack while working in his office in 1959. And that's, of course, in the administration portion, which is the castle-looking structure. And in that area, especially first, second floor, we get a lot of phantom smells. You may be walking down the hallway and you may smell like roses or a cherry pipe tobacco. And those are attributed to people who used to live, work in the front of the building. And Art Gladke used to smoke a pipe with cherry tobacco. So, people have experiences like that. Some people have claimed that they have seen, Art there and his wife, Helen, who died tragically in the East Admin on the second floor. A gun accidentally fell from one of the closets while she was reaching for a box. It discharged and struck her in the lung. She died several days later. But that's another phantom smell. People will smell roses. In fact, the first time my wife and I ever investigated, there was in 2004, and the smell of roses was really overpowering when we were there. So, and then people claim to see her too. So, a lot of people think, well, it's just the back of the prison that's haunted because that's where all the inmates were and everything. No.
It's interesting because a married couple and they both died on the property so that I could see them both staying there and being together.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of people believe that if there is life after death, that, you may go back to what you liked, what you knew, what you enjoyed. You don't have to die tragically in a location to haunted. There's a, you know, and I tend to believe that too, because of my experiences, there's always certain types of locations that are always haunted. And some of them don't have any tragic history behind them. Schools, you know, elementary schools up to universities, those seem to always be haunted. Movie theaters, you know, hospitals and prisons.
What is your experience before you started at the Ohio State Reformatory? And I'm assuming you do quite a few paranormal tours there.
Yes. I did my first investigation in 1991 and been involved in the paranormal since. Met my wife and we started investigating together in 2002. Then we joined a paranormal team in 2005. In 2013, we joined our own paranormal team, Tri-C Ghost Hunters. And then both of us, my wife, Kathy, and I, we both were volunteers at the Ohio State Reformatory. We started there in 2013. 2017, I became the lead paranormal investigator. 2019, Tri-C Ghost Hunters became the resident paranormal team there. And just back in 2022, my wife became the paranormal program manager there. So we have a lot of history with the prison.
When you went there for the first time and saw the building for the first time, did you feel it right away?
Oh, yeah. It's, and a lot of people, they have said the same thing. When I first drove down Reformatory Road and saw it, my first, you start getting nervous. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be spending the night in there. But after we were done, I told my wife, I said, when I retire, I want to work here and volunteer here. So that's what we did. I retired in 2011 and we started working there in 2013. It almost like it calls you, you know, it calls certain people and then it just like grabs you and it's like it won't let go.
I find that very interesting because I think it would also be so terrifying to be drawn to something like that. But do you find it as time has gone on terrifying? Are there still things that scare you when you go in there? Obviously, you are much better equipped to do something like that than I am. But do you find that you're more comfortable, not quite as jumpy as when you first started?
I do feel comfortable in most portions of the prison. There are a few areas that do make me nervous. At the end of a private investigation there, when the guests leave, sometimes I'm the only person there that I have to go close up. And there's like one area that it makes me nervous when I walk through there.
What are some of the more haunted areas in the prison?
Some of the more active areas are the cell blocks, the east and west. Solitary confinement, the whole third floor in the administration portion, which that's one of the areas that makes me nervous, and the West Attic. The West Attic is the number one location that people get nervous in.
What do you think it is about those locations? Have you uncovered anything in your research that would maybe explain why those particular areas have more activity?
I can tell you why the West Attic is really active, and that's because they used to house inmates up there. In 1930, there was a major fire at the Ohio Penitentiary in Columbus. Over 300 inmates perished in that fire, and they had to find other prisons within the Ohio penal system to place the other inmates while they rebuilt the penitentiary. And some 200 and some came to the reformatory. Now, in 1930, it was still an intermediate prison for young first-time nonviolent offenders. The guys coming from the penitentiary, they were your murderers, your rapists, your lifers, your felons. and they could not mix them with the general population. So they housed them in the attic. There was no jail cells up there. All that was up there was just a whole bunch of cots lined up and down the walls. Guards would lock the doors, and whatever went on in there went on. So if you can imagine all of the assaults, rapes, murders that have occurred up there. That's why there's so much energy up in the attic. And it was a violent place. And if you are not respectful up there, they can be violent towards you too.
When you conduct the investigations with average paranormal people like me, I don't have any real experience investigating. Is that a place that you take them, or is that a place that might be saved for people with more experience?
No, I do take them up there because they can't experience a lot, but I do tell them to be respectful and just be careful. I'm a retired police officer. I don't mind telling the spirits, ghosts, whatever you will, that I was a police officer. But just like when I was on duty, I treated everybody with respect. I treat them with respect too. That's what a lot of people want. Even, people who've committed crimes, they just want respect too. So I've never had anything bad physically happen to me up there. But it is the one area when I get groups in, I have three challenges that I offer them. See if they can experience anything and see if they're brave enough to do some of these. And we do one up in the attic called the Attic Challenge. And it's real simple. You just sit up in the attic, in the back of the attic by yourself for 15 minutes and just wait for the stuff to happen. And it's funny because I won't do that one, but a lot of the novices will. And I liken it to, like, let's say you're swimming at the beach and you get stung by a jellyfish. Pain's really intense. You come out and you're in a lot of pain. You're going to be a little bit apprehensive about going back in there swimming, where somebody that's never happened to, they're going to go in there in a heartbeat. I liken it to the attic. I've had so many experiences up there where I won't do the challenge. I was up there one time by myself with the lights off, but I couldn't get the light switch quick enough because the footsteps that were running up to me. So you can be up there. You can see these people describe a light that comes in that looks like somebody coming in with a flashlight. It almost looks like somebody's walking and the flashlight's bobbing as it's getting closer to you. But as you're calling out, nobody answers. And then as it gets closer, you turn your flashlights on, but there's nobody there, just the white light. And then it just disappears. I've been up there where it was just me and another investigator. We were doing a Facebook Live event. We were the only two people in the whole prison. And it does get nervous up there, even with just a couple people. And we just hear some screaming from the end of the attic. I mean, the hair on the back of your neck stands up and you're looking at each other. And, all our viewers heard it. And there's no explanation for it because there's nobody else in the building. Been up there. We had stuff thrown at us. Something walking around you. Footsteps all the time. Voices. And like I said, if you're not really careful, they can physically attack you. They can push you down. They can scratch you, which has happened.
Has it happened to any of your guests who have come in for a tour, or is that more of the experienced investigators?
Those were, I think one was actually a volunteer at the time. And one of them was, he was an experienced investigator. But he's the one who actually got pushed down. He something kicked the back of his leg, made his legs buckle, and he went down. The next day, he actually had a bruise on the inside back of his knee where something kicked him. So, but I really haven't had any physical stuff. You know, it's just the seeing things, the hearing things, you know, the footsteps, stuff being thrown.
And you have had a lot of paranormal investigators come in, and some big names have come in and done investigations. Have there been anything that the other investigators have found that really surprised you, or things that happened to other people that really surprised you that hadn't happened to you?
No, not really, because some of the teams, you know, the well-known TV shows that have come in, they have had experiences in the areas that we told them they were going to have experiences in.
They were kind of ready
for
it.
Yeah. Pardon?
They were kind of ready for it.
Yeah. In fact, there was one up, an investigator up in the attic. This was from a TV show. And this investigator was up there by themselves, and they captured like a white mist up there on their IR camera. You get stuff like that happens all the time. I remember one time we were giving a couple investigators a tour from a TV show, and kept telling them that the third floor East Admin, that's where a lot of the activity is. That's where you're going to get a lot of the activity. Well, they wanted to concentrate on the second level because that's where Helen Gladke had her tragic accident. But it's funny because watching the episode, they're down on the second floor, and all of a sudden you hear all these like thumps and walking from the third floor. And they go up there, and of course there's nothing there. So a lot of the stuff that they experience is what people experience in the prison.
For someone who isn't an experienced investigator, you have tours set up, correct?
Yeah, we have, we have our usual regular day tours throughout the day that has nothing to do with paranormal. Don't like mixing day stuff with the paranormal night stuff. But at night, we do offer two-hour ghost walks, and those are paranormal guided tours where we will take you through some of the most haunted places inside the prison, the lights off, of course, and we will tell you all the paranormal stuff that goes on there. And, you know, I'm one of the tour guides for that. I love doing that. And, you know, it's funny because my whole tour is pretty much all my personal experiences. And sometimes I throw in other people's experiences, but I've had so many experiences throughout, you know, numerous places inside the building that it's easy for me to do the tours. And I could talk for, you know, 3-4 hours on a tour telling everybody about what goes on here. There are some locations inside the prison that if you take a daytime guided tour, yes, they will take you to certain places that are off limits for regular self-guided tours. And that's how the ghost walk is. You know, West Attic, that's closed off during the daytime for self-guided tours. But when the lights go down off and the sun goes down, I will open that up for our ghost walks, and we do open it up for our private and public homes.
Are there any other stories that you'd like to share that have happened to you inside the building anywhere?
Oh yeah.
I love hearing these stories.
I mean, and some of these, you know, like the one just happened to my wife. It was our first private investigation of the year, which was the 10th of this month. And I have the group, we're up on third floor East Admin, which is a really haunted location. And it was my wife and I, we were the staff members who were working this night. She goes down the hallway a little, around a couple corners, and she's on the phone with her son and her grandson. And she's looking out the window. And she feels something behind her. And she turns and looks, and there's a figure standing just off to the side of her behind her. She usually doesn't get excited or scream or cuss when something like that happens, but she did that time. It really startled her. You know, she said a couple of choice words and like jumped back, and the figure like turned around and like backed away. And then as it was getting away from her, she says it started like shrinking, and then it shrunk down to almost like a ball, maybe a basketball sized ball. And then it started zigzagging down the hallway and then disappeared. Well, she come around the corner, and you could tell something happened to her. She was like, you know, excited, and she just, you know, just started talking. Hey guys, just what happened to me? And it really freaked her out. But we were really excited because we got security cameras up in those areas. So it's like, okay, let's go check the security camera. Now there's one security camera which would have captured her standing there and anything that was around her. So we went to check that camera. For some reason, the camera stopped recording. And these are motion cameras, so they will record when there's motion. That camera did not record any motion at all. But the camera where I was given the tour, where she come running into, that captured her running in there. And then there was another camera down the hall where that gray ball was rolling to, and you could see her flashlight at the time shining down the hall, trying to see the object. But the one that was actually going to pick it up did not record anything.
That's interesting. And it should have recorded her.
Yeah.
You know,
it didn't even record us walking through. So that was kind of, that was kind of strange. So we do have a lot of people that see apparitions, and I'm very skeptical on a lot of the paranormal, because for me, a lot of people's experiences, especially, you know, with equipment that could have logical explanations. And every time I see an apparition there, I'm always like, that's my eyes playing tricks on me. I didn't really see that. But the last time I saw an apparition was this past summer, and I'm in solitary confinement going past these cells that I've gone past hundreds of times. Going past this one cell, and I swear there was somebody standing right there in the cell. I mean, I kind of like jumped back a little. It's like, whoa, you know, it kind of like startled me. And I'm like, did I just see something there? But the woman who was directly behind me, she started crying because she saw it. That was kind of interesting. But I don't get nervous walking down solitary confinement. So I walk down there all the time by myself. But be cool to see one again.
That's interesting to me because, you know, your reaction is, what is that person doing in there? And, oh, wait, that isn't right. A person in there.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, and my thing, whenever I see something like that, most of the time it's just out of the corner of the eye. Mm-hmm. And then I just brush it off as, oh, it's just my eyes playing tricks on me. I really didn't see that. So there's another area where I saw an apparition. And a lot of the times when we're in the location, when I'm given a tour, I will tell the guest that I have seen an apparition in this area. I am not going to tell you what happened or where it occurred at. But if you have anything happen up here, come down and talk with me. Let's compare notes. And I have had people come talk with me afterwards where they experienced the apparition. That's where I experienced it. So, and I when I do my tours too, especially up in the attic, I don't like telling people everything that goes on up there. I want to see if they're going to experience things without knowing anything about what goes on up there.
I think that's a good point too, because if you as the guide are telling them too much, they're expecting things and you're in the dark. So you're going to think that you're seeing things maybe that you're not seeing. You kind of implant that. but kind of to prepare them to walk in there. But if you tell them too much, they're going to expect things.
Exactly. And then it's like, oh, we didn't have anything happen that night. And also, I don't want to put, you know, the thought, you know, if I say that, ooh, you know, this is what people experience up here, you may experience, they may just experience that in their mind because they want to experience, and it may not be anything paranormal. It may just be their imagination playing with them.
And as any paranormal tour, you might experience something, you might not experience something.
Exactly. These spirits are not on the payroll.
No. If they were, then that would be probably a Halloween attraction that you have built to scare them right. Every single night. Have you ever gone through on a tour with a group and what they shared with you surprised you? Like maybe they experienced something that you weren't familiar with, or you were surprised that happened to them?
Not really. I mean, we do have groups that will come in and, you know, say that they've had conversations with a spirit or somebody in this area and they got this name. Do we know, you know, has that name ever come up before? And well, it's like, you know, there's 56,000 or so inmates that came through there. So chances are any name you come up with, that they were probably there. But not really. I mean, there's some stories that I've heard. I've heard about like the sub-basement is really active. People really like the sub-basement, and they see what they describe as like a spider monkey and stuff like that. I have never had an experience in the sub-basement. You know, there are certain areas where people have had a lot of experience where I've never had anything. Or not even really heard of anything.
And once again, like you said, it might happen to you. It might not happen to you.
Right. And when I give my tours, like in the chapel area, I rate my tours on a scale of one or the locations on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the least active, 5 being the most active. Well, for me, the chapel is, I would give it like a 0 or a 1. Because I find it to be one of the more calmer areas in the prison. Sometimes I just go up there and sit and just relax. I don't find it, scary or any. I find it really calming. But when I do the tours, I say, now this is just my opinion and some of the volunteers and staff members who also have the same opinion too. And from what I hear from my guests. Because I take all of that into consideration for all this activity. You know, but you may experience something totally different. I do know people, I've had some people that say, you know, the chapel is the most active location in the prison. Well, you know, and I understand that for them, but, you know, I've been there since 2004 investigating and talking with other people and guests and staff members. We don't get a lot, but some people do. So we're all different. And sometimes that surprises me when somebody says that they've had a harrowing experience at a certain location where not too much happens.
And you said 56,000 inmates had been housed in the building at one time?
No, that's throughout the years.
Throughout the years, excuse me.
Yeah.
The 56,000 people have gone through the doors.
I think that's what the total had, give or take. The prison was originally built when they built the east cell block and the west cell block. It usually held about 1,900 inmates. That would be two to a cell. So around 1,900, 2,000 inmates. But, you know, even in the 30s, it was over 3,000 inmates there. So even way back then, there was overcrowding in the prisons.
And when you think about that, how many people never did leave because they were in a prison? A lot of people would have passed there. And then just the dark energy that would associate with so many of those people, especially the story you shared about all those people coming in who are hardened criminals into the facility and just kind of lock the doors. You guys do what you're going to do. It just really leaves a lot of energy behind.
There's a lot of energy there, lot of energy. And in fact, you know, it's funny because it's generally accepted that there was over 200 deaths in the prison. I had a guard, a former guard, that was one of my guests on a private investigation last summer. And so, you know, I was getting all this information from him. I said, it's generally accepted that there was like over 200 deaths here in the prison. And remember him saying, he goes, we probably had over 200 deaths in the 8 years that I was here. So a lot of hangings, a lot of sadness, a lot of suicides in the prison.
And in the early days, they wouldn't have kept good records, or the records they did keep would have been on paper and long gone by now.
It could be lost or swept under the rug. I mean, who knows, you know, what they did back then. So
people can take regular tours, as we were talking, during the day, and then you can also do the paranormal tours at night. I'm assuming the money raised from those helps with maintenance of the building.
Continuing maintenance and restoration. We're always in the process of restoring areas. And we also have, you know, there's museums there. We have the Ohio Penal Museum at the reformatory, which, you know, there's artifacts and stuff, you know, from the reformatory and from other prisons throughout the state of Ohio. And then we have an Ohio Industrial Museum, where they have like a lot of old stuff, you know, from the history of Ohio, like, you know, appliances from like maybe the 40s, 50s, stuff like that. And then they also have the Shawshank Museum, where they have, you know, memorabilia and stuff from the movie. So they do have several museums there, and we do a lot of different events throughout the year, too. I mean, some of the events are pretty big. Coming up in May, in fact, my wife and I are the organizers of an event called the Parapsychon. It's a paranormal and psychic convention.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it really is. We have upwards of almost 100 vendor tables. We have 14 celebrities from paranormal TV shows. We have several speakers. We have a VIP meet and greet that's held at an off location Friday night. We have a celebrity ghost hunt that's held Saturday night. And then they're getting all the money raised from all those events. My wife and I, we don't make any money off the event. In fact, we put a lot of our own money into the event. Everything goes back into the reformatory, you know, for its maintenance and restoration.
What are the dates on that again?
The actual dates of the event are Saturday, May 20th and Sunday, May 21st. And you just pay your admission into the Ohio State Reformatory. And our vendors, our speakers, our celebrities, you can go meet and talk with them for free. We also do a food drive and a pet supply and pet food drive that we donate to a couple animal shelters and a homeless shelter there. So it's all about giving back. So we all do all that stuff for charity.
I can't wait to take a trip and go see it for myself now.
Yeah, you should.
I would absolutely love that. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Greg Baketic, lead paranormal investigator at the Ohio State Reformatory. If you like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you can become a gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts. You can try it 3 days absolutely free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and get everything there, all ad-free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes. Thank you for listening.